Tales of the Left Hand, Book 3, written and read by John Maher. The story so far. Carla and her companions are at the home of Brendan Montrose, Duke Stephen's representative in Maipur. Not fully trusting Brendan, Carla decides she needs a second opinion as to the state of affairs in this city, and she has turned to Clegg to find the right place to get it. Chapter 4. Getting to the Western Gate's no trouble, Montrose assured Carla as she swung up into her saddle. Just get down to the harbor and keep the bay on your left. My port shaped more or less like a crescent, the Western Gate's and the southwestern tip.
Shouldn't it be the southwestern gate, then?
Clegg muttered to Wick, who shrugged. If Montrose heard the cook, he gave no indication of it.
Are you sure you don't want a guide along to take you there?
You've been very generous already, Brendan, Carla said, watching his face. Now that Grievous had pointed it out, she could see evidence of Montrose's anxiety towards her. He wouldn't meet her eyes, at least for long, and always seemed to be doing something else that made the lack of eye contact understandable, such as checking the harness of one of the horses, or doing another quick count of the supplies, making sure the party had everything they needed. Her curiosity urged her to press him, to find out what was bothering him, but she had no idea what she might stir up by doing so. Anxious or not, she thought, he's still the only resource we have in this city, and we need to come back through here on our way home. Don't burn a bridge you know you'll need on the way back. I've been here a few times, and your directions to reach the gate will be easy enough to follow.
And I've been here a few more times than that, Clegg added.
Now, once we leave the city, we just follow the road out of the gate and stay on it until we reach the abbey, right? Carla asked.
That's right, Montrose told her. There are farms and some larger homesteads out there, so you'll come to more than one fork in the road, but stay to the wider road each time, and you should reach the abbey late tomorrow.
Carla offered him her hand, which he took with only the slightest hesitation. Then we'll be off. Thanks once more, Brendan.
When will you be back?
I don't know. A week, maybe two? I'll send word ahead if I can.
Brendan nodded. Good luck, then.
Carla waved, then turned her horse and urged it forward at a trot. Grievous rode up alongside her.
Surely he has arranged for someone to follow us.
No doubt, she replied, but there's not much we can do about it, is there? There's little to report anyway. We're leaving the city and heading up to the abbey. We're just making one stop first. She looked over her shoulder. Clegg, you know where you're going?
The cook nodded.
Been thinking about it since you brought it up, lass. It's a sailor's bar, so it'll be down near the harbor. I recall seeing the sign from the deck of the Cutlass last time Jolly brought us here, and we were berthed.
He paused to think, the tip of his tongue sticking out of his mouth.
On the south side. So we ride down to the harbor and along the quay. Like as not, we'll go right past it.
Sounds good. Carla turned her attention ahead of her once more, guiding her horse down the road.
Is there a reason you want to visit this particular tavern?
Grievous asked her in a quieter voice. There's two, Carla acknowledged. Like Clegg said, it's a sailor's tavern. That means new arrivals to my port come in there all the time. When sailors reach a new port, often they're as hungry for news as they are for a hot meal. That doesn't mean the news is entirely accurate, but if we ask a few folk about the pilgrims, we can compare their stories to what Montrose has been telling us.
As you said, a second opinion. And the other reason?
Clegg needs something to do. He saved my life, and most likely yours when he killed Tovas. Grievous shrugged in grudging agreement. He called the favor in, and he's coming along with us. But he needs more to do than just cook the meals. He's not a trained fighter like you or Wick, but he's clever and pays attention to what's going on around him. Then I realized he's the closest thing we have to a local expert on this city, so why not put him to work?
Grievous nodded. And when we leave this city, what role will you assign him then?
One thing at a time, Captain, one thing at a time. That brought a chuckle from Grievous. They turned their horses down a side street that led towards the harbor. This took far less time than Carla expected. She was used to Kohane, where traveling down to the harbor from the Duke's estate was not something one did on a whim. When they reached the wide road running along the length of the quay, they turned southwest, keeping the bay on their left. Carla started looking for tavern signs, trying to recall her own bleary memories of that night. "What was the name of that place?" she asked Clegg. "The Starry Nest?"
Something like that, Clegg agreed, squinting ahead. Should be a bit further down, closer to the gate.
Perhaps it's not here anymore, Wick suggested, or the name's changed.
Clegg laughed. Taverns never go away unless they burn down, there's a blessing. And the names don't change much either, especially a sailor's tavern.
Why's that? Wick asked.
Bad for business, Clegg said. If a sea dog visits a port and has a good time in a particular watering hole, the first thing he'll do when he comes back is look for that place again. He won't know or care that the owner died or sold the place to someone else. He'll just be looking for the name over the door, or the sign if he can't read. If he doesn't see that sign, he'll go somewhere else. He grinned. You keep the name, you keep the customers.
It would then help for that sailor to actually remember the name, Grievous added.
Clegg snorted in reply. It'll be here, it'll be here.
I don't remember what the sign looked like, Kerla added. Do you?
Clegg's leathery face twisted into a scowl of concentration. I think it showed a fellow sitting in a chair, taking his ease.
What does that have to do with a starry nest? Wick asked.
Clegg began to offer wild and improvised theories to answer that question. In the meantime, Kerla looked ahead, studying the long, curving arc of buildings lining the landward side of the wide avenue. She could see some tiny rectangles, signs hanging above door frames.
One's displaying a coat of arms, and another's got a frog with an axe in its back?
She shook her head, wondering what that meant.
The third one, that looks like someone sitting in a chair.
She smiled, keeping the discovery to herself. Let Clegg take the credit. He'll see it when we get closer. Beyond the signs, there was movement that drew her attention, a cluster of figures disembarking from a ship. They were wearing white, or rather what had once been white, long since travel-stained into a pale brownish-gray. She couldn't make out any other details. They were on the far side of the city, probably very close to the gate she and her group would be passing through before long. Another group of pilgrims arriving, she thought. She wondered how many were already at the abbey and how they might complicate her mission.
We'll just have to find out when we get there, she knew. Can't imagine Tesca would be doing any differently than I am now.
Ah! Clegg yelled less than a minute later, pointing. There she is! There's the sign! You're the one with the eyes, girl, he called up to Kerla. Did I get the name right?
Kerla took another look.
Close. It's not Starry Nest. It's Strabo's Rest.
Grievous whipped his head up, squinting at the sign himself.
What?
He hissed, his voice tight as he suddenly spurred his horse to a trot. Alarmed, Kerla did the same, trying to catch up to him. He was now moving faster than the traffic around him and drawing some attention to himself. Behind her, she heard Wick and Clegg's exclamations as they started to follow. Grievous seemed oblivious to everything but the tavern sign, still squinting, trying to read the painted name himself. Kerla brought her horse alongside his.
What is it? She said in a quiet voice.
Grievous didn't respond, continuing forward, only reining his horse in until he was almost directly underneath the sign, staring up at it. His hands were clenched into fists, trembling with emotion.
They dare, he spat. They dare!
Dare to what? Kerla asked, looking at the sign herself. At this distance, the sign did look familiar. She had a hazy recollection now from 3 years ago, a glimpse from that night she'd gone drinking with Clegg. The tavern's name was painted in faded white letters. Above the name, the sign depicted a dark-skinned islander reclining in a chair, his legs propped up on the table in front of him, raising a tankard in welcome. She was glad she'd convinced Grievous, for the sake of preserving his disguise, to stow his weapons inside his luggage. The man looked angrier than she'd ever seen him.
The last thing we need right now is Grievous challenging the tavern owner to a duel. But I still don't see why he's so angry.
She took a closer look at the sign. It was old, the colors faded by years of sun and weather, and she realized that when the sign was first painted, the man's skin color would have been much, much darker.
Not an islander, she realized. A Sabrian.
You know that name? She asked Grievous.
Strabo?
Grievous inhaled sharply as she said it, a shudder of fury running through him. And full understanding dawned upon her when she realized that the legendary pirate Grievous had slain 30 years before must have had another name before he started calling himself Praetorius Rex.
Triad's mercy, she breathed. That's his name, isn't it?
Before he lost all claim to it, Grievous finished, his voice a grating whisper. The family burned him from their roles. The man depicted above us no longer exists.
His gaze dropped to the tavern door.
They dare.
They don't know, Careless said, putting a hand on his arm.
How could they not? How else could that name be here?
Grievous stared up at the sign again, seething with rage.
If members of that noble family knew this place existed, they would sail here with torches and burn it down.
Grievous turned to look at Kerla.
And I would assist them.
Keep your voice down, Kerla warned him. We can't attract this sort of attention, not out here in the street.
Everything all right, mistress? Wick asked as he and Clegg rode up.
Kerla looked at Grievous.
Is it?
Grievous did not answer her. Instead, he looked at Clegg.
You planned this.
Plan what?
Clegg asked. Grievous pointed up at the sign.
Bringing us here, showing me this!
Clegg raised an eyebrow as he glanced at the sign. Then, as Kerla had done, he took a second look at it. A moment later, his gaze dropped back to Grievous. Kerla could see the wheels turning in the old cook's mind as he quickly reached the same conclusion Kerla had. Unlike her, however, the old pirate grinned at his discovery.
I had no idea, friend. Just wanted another taste of the cinnamon rum is all.
He glanced at the sign once more.
Strabo, eh? So that's his real name. Do not speak that name again in my presence, Grievous commanded. It should never be spoken aloud, never be written down.
Name? Whose name? Wick asked. What in the hells are we talking about?
Clegg ignored the guard as he sneered at Grievous.
I don't take orders from you.
But you take them from me, Kerla snapped. You agreed to that, Clegg. That's enough from both of you.
She could feel the eyes of passers-by on them. It wouldn't be long before a crowd formed.
Everyone off the horses. Get inside.
Grievous bristled.
I will not set foot inside that building.
She whipped around, jabbing a finger into his chest.
You will. I don't have time for your damn pride now, and I'm not leaving you outside by yourself.
I could stay outside with...
Wick began to offer.
No, Kerla cut him off. We stay together, all of us.
She looked Grievous in the eye.
Get off your horse and go inside. Now.
Grievous glared at her, but after a moment, he slid off his horse and tied the reins to a post outside the door. Kerla glanced at Wick. The guard nodded and followed suit. As Grievous and Wick went inside the tavern, Kerla turned to Clegg, who was trying unsuccessfully to hide his look of satisfaction.
What are you doing?
The cook spread his hands.
I told you I didn't know about the name, lass. Hells, I didn't even remember the name.
I believe you, but why are you antagonizing him?
The cook shrugged.
Them black bastards are always so full of themselves. I can't pass up a chance to take a little wind out of their sails.
That's the last time you do that, she told him. I mean it, Clegg. You push him too far, and he'll kill you before I can stop him.
She glared at him.
This is the second time today I'm reminding you to behave. I'm not having this conversation a third time. Do you understand?
Behave? He insults me, damn near calls me a liar to my face, and you tell me to behave?
Kerla bit back an angry reply.
Okay, you're right on that one, she admitted. I'll deal with it. But right now we need to get off the street and stop drawing attention to ourselves.
Clegg frowned, looking away.
Let's go inside. Get yourself one of those rums you've been wanting and calm down.
Clegg did not argue further as he and Kerla got off their horses and entered Strabo's Rest. The tavern was moderately crowded. Some folk had come in for a midday meal. Others looked as if they had come in the night before and hadn't left yet. Her muddled memories of the first time she'd been here rose to the surface of her mind and were quickly meshing with this fresh, sober perspective. The tavern's interior was dim. The sun's glow came through the door behind her and the shuttered window set into the front wall. Strabo's Rest was a single open space with a low ceiling. Thick wooden beams were set upright at regular intervals as support columns. Circular platforms had been built around each of these, serving as standing tables for patrons. There were round tables and chairs set along the side walls as well. The bar took up most of the rear wall, the rest occupied by a staircase in the far right corner, leading to a second floor. Kerla quickly spotted Wick and Grievous at a table on the left wall. Grievous was sitting ramrod straight in his chair, his face curled up as if he smelled something foul. But his eyes were surveying the room, taking in every detail. She'd half expected to find an old Sabrian flag hanging on the wall, or some other decorations that alluded to the imperial heritage of the tavern's namesake, but there was nothing like that in here.
If he's looking for more reasons to be offended, she thought, steering Clegg towards the table, I don't think he's going to find any. Aside from the name outside, this place looks like every other dockside tavern in the Freeze that I've ever been in. So where did the name come from? Here we are, she said, guiding Clegg to one of the remaining chairs, putting the table between him and Grievous. Reaching into the purse at her belt, she took out several coins and handed them to Wick. Get us four of those cinnamon rums Clegg's been going on about, will you? Wick glanced at Grievous and Clegg, then nodded as he rose and headed for the bar. Carla sat in the seat Wick had vacated, putting her back to the wall. All right, gentlemen, she began, keeping her voice calm, though some part of her wanted to scream curses at the pair of them. Let's not waste time arguing about what happened outside. You don't have to like each other to work together, but you do need to work together. It's only the four of us against, well, against whatever else is out there. We can't watch each other's backs if we're glaring into each other's eyes. I'll have your promise on this, both of you. Clegg sighed.
Very well, lass. You have my promise. We're all shipmates now, and I watch out for my shipmates.
Grievous did not reply at first. He continued to study Clegg, frowning. What if I refuse? I'm going to the Abbey whether you agree to this or not, Carla snapped, her patience at an end. Grievous looked surprised at that, and she recognized her error. Damn it, that implies I have more than one reason to go to the Abbey, doesn't it? She smiled, masking her unease. What I mean, Captain, is that we are going to the Abbey whether you agree to this or not. My job is to get you there. She waited a beat. It doesn't say what condition you have to be in when you arrive. Clegg snickered, turning his face away. Grievous's face remained blank as stone. He simply studied her face, gauging her resolve. Carla gave him a few more seconds of silence before speaking again. Fraternabellum, I'll have that promise now. It was a gamble pushing him this hard. She knew it. He might push back, call her bluff. And what would I do then? Physically assault him? Hogtie him to his saddle and ride up to the Abbey? She wasn't really worried about that possibility, however. Grievous wanted to go to the Abbey. The quest that drove him on, that had taken him this far, demanded it. He would make the promise. She was sure of it. The real gamble, she knew, was whether he would hold a grudge for being forced into it. The Sabrian reputation for settling scores was well known and well deserved. We're fraternal belly and we're friends. He's called me both. If those terms mean as much to him as I think they do, then he'll understand why I'm doing this. At last, Grievous stirred.
I promise as well. Shall we then proceed with the reason for coming in here? Oh, the rum'll be here soon, Clegg assured him, looking towards the bar. You'll like it.
He chuckled as a muscle in Grievous's jaw twitched.
Just a joke, Sarah. I know why we're here. Chatting with some of the locals is a damn fine idea, if you ask me.
Carla sighed and glanced towards the bar herself. The barkeep had set out several small wooden cups and was pouring a reddish liquid into each one. But then she noticed that there were six cups, not four. Wick picked up two and handed one each to two men standing next to him at the bar. Then he collected the other four cups in his hands and made his way across the floor towards them, the two men following. I think Wick's taken some initiative on that, Carla said, nodding in the guard's direction. She turned to Grievous. Even if you have questions, you can't ask them. Your accent's too strange. The Sabrian gave her a grudging nod. One more thing. If one of them sits next to you, don't back up. Grievous looked surprised. Sabrians generally maintain nearly a foot more space around themselves than Northerners do, she quickly explained. That extra space can draw notice. Grievous chuckled, putting one finger to the corner of his eye and rubbing it for a moment. Carla smiled as she looked up at Wick. I see you've brought back some friends.
That I have, mistress, said the guard as he set the cups down in front of them. These fellows are Masters Joram Tarley and Rigo Maletta.
Both men nodded.
I was asking the barkeep about those folk in white we saw by the western gate, and Master Tarley heard me. That got us to talking. Thought I'd bring them back here to share their news, since you were curious about them as well.
Wick looked slightly nervous.
Was that all right?
That's fine, Wick. A very good idea. Carla turned to the newcomers. Welcome, gentlemen. Please join us.
Don't mind if we do, miss,
said Tarley as he pulled up a chair, sitting next to Grievous. Carla could see Grievous shift in his chair, preparing to slide back out of habit, but he caught himself and remained where he was.
Maleta took a chair from another table and brought it over, sitting down next to Clegg. Both men looked to be in their early middle years, dark hair thinning on top and graying on the sides, though Tarly's hair grew in thick curls, suggesting some islander ancestry. Maleta's hair was straight. The skin on their arms and faces was dark leather, spotted and creased into deep wrinkles by years in the sun. Tarly had brown eyes set back in deep sockets and a wide, grinning mouth that still had most of its teeth. Maleta's eyes were narrower and blue. His smile was thinner, more guarded than his friend's. Kerla also noted that he wore a sash around his waist, stripes of bright blue and yellow, while Tarly's pants were held up by a cracked leather belt. Tarly raised his cup.
To new friends in calm seas!
The rest of the group joined him in the toast, Clegg and Tarly downing theirs in single gulps. Maleta, Grievous, Kerla, and Wick each sipped at theirs. Wick's eyes bugged out as the fragrant liquor hit the back of his throat, but Grievous seemed unaffected, his only reaction a contemplative nod as he rolled the taste around in his mouth. Clegg leaned back in his chair with a satisfied sigh.
Ah, that brings back memories.
It certainly does, Kerla agreed, feigning her enthusiasm. The taste of the liquor, while not unpleasant, had brought up the memory of the last time she'd been here with a vengeance. She coughed once and smiled at Tarly, wishing she had some water at hand.
To new friends. She glanced at Tarly's clothes. I take it you're not from Maipori yourself?
Tarly smiled, glancing at Maleta.
Aye, that's true. I don't wear the sash, though I've lived in Maipori longer than some who do. My wife, bless her, was Rigo's cousin, and she was the reason I stayed. She wore the sash till her final day, and so do our sons.
Maleta nodded in approval.
Originally, though, I'm from Nalos.
And you? Just arrived?
Yesterday, Kerla said, knowing that if she'd said they arrived today, both of these men would instantly think of the Cutlass. She quickly recalled the other ships she'd seen in the harbor. Three of the ships docked on the southern side of the city had flown the same flag, and she took a gamble.
We're in from Venderel.
Tarly nodded.
I noticed some of those people in white as we came in, she went on, and I wondered who they were. Then this morning I saw more of them getting off a ship. Are they pilgrims?
Tarly sighed, sounding disappointed.
That they are.
To Kerla's surprise, Clegg put a silver coin on the table and pushed it towards her.
You win, he said. I was sure they couldn't be pilgrims. They never come this far south.
Tarly laughed.
Friend, I'd have made that same bet myself if I hadn't seen them. Pilgrims are something for the mainland, not the Frees.
Well, where are they going? Kerla asked. I went to morning prayers at the cathedral, and I didn't see any of them up there.
You won't, Maleta put in.
Tarly grinned at his friend.
The daughter smiled upon us. She allowed the miracles to take place up at the abbey instead of here.
He shook his head.
Feel bad for the monks having to put up with that lot, but it's better than them still wandering our streets, eh, Rigo?
Maleta nodded in approval.
The abbey, Kerla said. I've heard of it.
Ravino, Tarly prompted.
Ravino, that's it. Thank you.
Sounds like you were saying that pilgrims used to wander your streets, Clegg put in. They did, until Valiant threw them out, Tarly said with a satisfied grin. Well, it doesn't stop them from getting off the ships as they arrive, but they're sent straight through the gate and on up to the abbey. No loitering about in the city anymore.
He chuckled.
There was some of that lot who objected, but Valiant said...
He turned to Maleta.
How'd he put it, Rigo?
It was his gracious gift to them, said his quiet friend.
Tarly laughed.
That was it. That showed him.
Wick frowned.
If you don't mind me saying, that seems a bit less than gracious.
Tarly shook his head.
Now he was just throwing it back at them. They started it with their own, aggressive interpretation of the gracious gift.
Ah, Wick said, nodding. He broke off when he realized that he was the only one who seemed to know what Tarly was talking about.
I don't follow, Kerla said. I know about the gracious gift, of course. It's an act of charity, she added, noticing Grievous shift in his chair, curious but unable to ask questions.
Those who have, giving to those who have not, Wick said. The daughter herself smiles upon those who offer the gracious gift.
Clegg laughed.
So what's this aggressive charity? Take this bread or else?
Wick shook his head.
The aggression comes from the other direction. My dad grew up in Terrandor. It's something he told me would happen up there at times, in places having trouble. You know, crops are lean for a few seasons, and folk are hungry and desperate. Then some rich fellow rides through town. Folk get it into their heads.
Well, he has, we hasn't, and of course he'll be most pleased for the daughter smiling upon him afterwards.
Clegg laughed again. Ah, so it's theft wrapped in faith.
Wick frowned at Clegg's unvarnished description. That's one way of looking at it. He looked at Tarly and Maleta. Is that what's going on here? The two locals looked amused at the exchange.
Something like that, Tarly said, gesturing to his friend. Rigo had to deal with him himself. He's a cobbler by trade. Well, one day two of these pilgrims come into his shop, and before long they're telling him what a hard trip they've had, how their feet are worn bloody, and how their trek to the abbey would be so much easier if they had new shoes on their feet, but, oh dear, they've spent their last coin buying passage to Maipur.
Rigo nodded, taking up the tale himself.
A man can only take so much of that. I went into the back and found some spares one of my apprentices made. They weren't good enough to sell, but I kept them around. Seemed like the daughter had set them aside a purpose.
He shrugged and sipped at his drink.
But it didn't end there. Next day, a few more of those folk come by. They heard about my earlier charity.
You throw a single gull a scrap of meat, before long the whole flock swarming round you,
Tarly added.
Truth, Maleta agreed. I managed to find a few more spares in the back for this lot, but they keep coming. Now they start acting as if they're entitled to the damn shoes. I'm out of spares by now. Any more shoes I hand out takes food off my family's plates. A few of them start actually getting mad when I turn them away, quoting scripture as if they were priests and had a right to lecture me on the proper way to behave.
He finished his drink, slamming his cup down on the table. Tarly nodded, reaching for his own cup, then frowning when he realized it was empty. Kerla pushed some coins across the table towards them.
Please have another. Consider it my own gracious gift.
Both men's moods brightened. So, Kerla asked Maleta as Tarly stood up and headed back to the bar, I imagine what happened to you was happening all over the city?
Aye, wasn't till they started doing the caravans that things turned ugly, though.
Caravans? Maleta nodded. The rum appeared to be relaxing him, making him more talkative.
Well, the white bellies, as we call them, have been coming into the city and heading up to the abbey for years now. Not too many, but it was recently, not long before the damp began, that they started coming in larger numbers. That's when I started having my trouble with them. Still, wasn't that bad till a few weeks later, when some of the ones already up at the abbey started coming back down here to meet the new arrivals. They'd gather them together and head up as a group once there were enough of them.
He broke off his tale as Tarly returned, setting a filled wooden cup in front of him. Maleta took a sip before continuing.
I'm telling him about the caravans now.
Tarly nodded.
And them tougher ones?
Getting to it, Maleta assured him.
Now, while them white bellies are waiting to head up to the abbey as a group, they've got time on their hands.
Time to come into the city and look for more handouts, Tarly put in.
I was visiting Rigo in his shop when they came calling again. So, in comes a few of them, but there's one who's clearly in charge. He looked different than the others.
Different? Kerla asked. How?
Well, he was cleaner, for one. His clothes were white, but not nearly so dirty. And he didn't walk like the others. Most of the pilgrims, they've been cooped up on a ship for a bit, not much food, no money. They sort of shuffle about, like a dog watching for the next kick, you know?
Kerla nodded.
Now this fella, he was no dog you get away with kicking. He walked like a soldier, and if your eyes met, he wasn't the first to look away.
Tarly shook his head and took a sip from his cup.
Ah, most generous of you, my dear.
He gestured at Wick.
Anyway, this fellow actually invokes the gracious gift, more like what you were talking about earlier, lad. He comes right out and tells Rigo that since he's offered charity before, he should be offering charity again. And he actually produces a list, mind you, of how many shoes he'd been needing. I couldn't believe it, Maleta added. The bastard showed more cheek than a fat man with no pants.
Kerla actually burst out laughing before Tarly took up the tale again.
Now, this fellow looked like someone you really didn't want to be starting a fight with. But Rigo, he's got kids of his own to feed. So he tells the fellow, politely as he can, mind you, that he's given all he will. Bit of a tense moment there. I won't deny I was glancing around the shop, choosing what I'd pick up to fight with if things went bad. So, the fellow looks the two of us up and down. He talks to us after that like he's real disappointed and says he'll be back tomorrow, hoping Rigo will find it in his heart to give. But you can see it in his eye. We've moved from friend to enemy, Maleta put in. Then he wishes us the blessings of the sun and leaves, the other pilgrims tagging along behind him.
Kerla noticed Wick turn serious. He'd been smiling good-naturedly at the two locals, sipping his drink and nodding as they told their tale. But something in that last sentence troubled him.
"So, what happened the next day?" she asked.
Tarly grinned. "Rigo took a holiday?" "Aye, he closed up his shop and spent the day helping me repair some fishing nets."
"Not my idea of a proper holiday, mind you," said Mileta with a smile.
Tarly gave his friend a good-natured nudge with his elbow.
"So, that was that for us. But them pilgrims visited plenty of other merchants that same day, and those who hadn't coughed up more charity got a second visit on the next."
"Word spread pretty fast," Mileta agreed. "It was clear there were at least 3 or 4 groups moving about the city, maybe more, all of them with one of these tougher lads in the lead. They were pretty much taking the attitude, 'We're here following the will of the triad, so if you don't make a donation, then you're not just selfish, you're committing a sin.'"
Kerla and her companions were all serious now. Even Clegg was leaning forward in his seat, giving the two men his full attention.
Tarly sighed. "Well, Count Valiant wasn't going to allow that sort of thing very long. They pulled that trick for another day or two at most before he had his guards round up the lot and escort them outside the walls of the city."
"He didn't arrest them?" Kerla asked.
"There's protecting your merchants, and there's asking for trouble," Tarly explained. "Last thing his lordship wants is a bunch of martyrs imprisoned or dead in his city. That'll just bring more of them. And, well, the way we hear it, there's more of those rougher lads up at the abbey, and there's someone in command of them."
Wick shifted in his chair at that, looking more concerned than before.
Mileta spoke up. "Now when more pilgrims come in, Valian's guard just walks them off the ships and straight through the gate to join the others in the little camp they've set up. No one bothers them out there."
"How would," Tarly muttered, "all that damn chanting."
"Chanting?
You haven't heard it? Pass close to the western gate and you can't miss it. All day long it goes, and at the top of their lungs too. Sounds more like soldiers drilling if you ask me, though what they're shouting sounds like bits and pieces of scripture. Them tougher ones, the ones who come back down from the abbey, they're the ones leading the chants."
Wick sighed. Kerla watched as the guard picked up his cup and drained the remaining contents with hardly any reaction to the liquor.
"He knows who these pilgrims are," she realized, "but he doesn't want to talk about it, at least not in front of our new friends. That's fine. It's time to go, anyway."
"Well, gentlemen, thank you for the news," she said with a smile. "It's an eye-opener and no mistake."
"You're leaving, miss?" Tarly asked. "You should stay and have another drink with us."
Kerla chuckled. "Buy you another drink, you mean?"
Tarly laughed.
"Ah, there's no harm in asking."
"None at all, but we do have to get moving."
She rose from her chair, exchanging polite nods with Mileta.
"Oh, actually, I do have one question." She pointed towards the front door. "Who's Strabo?"
The two men looked at each other and smiled.
"Well, around here, miss, it's pronounced Strabo," Mileta gently corrected. "It's a Sabrian name."
"Sabrian?" Kerla asked, momentarily catching Grievous's eye.
The captain was sitting very still, fully alert, and he gave Kerla the tiniest smile in thanks. Now that he had calmed down, his curiosity outweighed his indignation, and he was grateful she had asked the question he could not. Kerla couldn't help but be curious herself.
"How does a tavern in Maipur get a Sabrian name above the door?"
"Now that," Tarly said with a laugh, "requires another story."
This work is copywritten 2013 and has been written and recorded by John Maher. If you'd like to learn more about the Freeze, get yourself a bit of swag, or comment on this episode, please visit talesoftheleftand.com, where you can also find a link to our official Facebook page, and if you'd like, make a donation to help keep this series going. Thanks for listening.